This is the Artful Dodger, and you're listening to Guildcast. And yes, older people play Guild Wars too. Isn't that right, Loudon?
Hey everyone, welcome back to this 56th episode of Guildcast for November 25th, 2006. I'm your host, Sean. This week, we're going to talk about the basics of farming, what farming means exactly, how it's changed over the course of Guild Wars, and some of the current best farming areas. First, some people who asked to be mentioned this week include Lillian Ashcroft and Lord Ping. As for game news of importance, on Tuesday, November 21st, they added new guild emblems created from winning concepts in the Nightfall Guild Emblem Contest. They added two new commands, slash bonus and slash special, to create items that were previously created using the slash bonus items command. The slash bonus command creates items that may be created many times, such as the pre-order items, but the slash special command creates items that may be created only once per account, such as collector's edition items. They also set the minimum level to 20 for random arenas, Jade Quarry, and Fort Aspenwood. They added unique divine auras for the Paragon and Dervish available to players who own the collector's edition of Guild Wars Prophecies. They made the Ebon Dust Aura skill available for capture. They modified profession changers so that they give players Paragon and Dervish skills when these secondary professions are selected. They fixed a bug with the Healer's Boon skill. Its extra healing bonus now applies to all healed characters, not just the first person healed. They fixed a bug that caused the Blood Bond skill to give a larger than expected health degen in some cases. They fixed a bug that allowed heroes to use targeted shouts on targets who are out of range. And they fixed a bug that allowed PvP characters to select secondary professions from campaigns that they didn't own. There were also some changes to the game that weren't noted in the official update notes. This includes the fact that Gates of Torment has now been renamed to Gate of Torment. The quest Hunting Abaddon has been renamed to Good Demon Hunting. However, the quest giver Churazik has been removed from the Gate of Torment. The merchants in Lair of the Forgotten, the Mouth of Torment, and Ruins of Mora now sell ancient Alonian keys. Prior to this update, they used to mistakenly sell Marganite keys. The patch client has been once again translated into Polish. It was reverted to English about 2 weeks ago, so Polish in-game text is still unavailable. Preceptor Zunark's profession has been changed from monk to dervish. Now, regarding the birthday party, that was last weekend, and while I still haven't had time to put together the video, I'm hoping to do that very soon, hopefully sometime this week. I must say, though, that party was overwhelming. I logged in, and I saw the massive blob of light and dark blue dots on my radar map when I stepped into the Great Temple of Balthazar, and I was just floored. I mean, when I ran up to those stairs, you know, to the balcony where everybody was congregated, I literally had to just pan my view around just to take it all in. You know, it was really overwhelming. But let me first say, before anything else, that I was not expecting that sort of turnout at all. I was asked by someone a few days before just about how many people I expected, and they were saying, like, you think there'll be 50 people? You think there'll be 75? And I said, I don't think there'll be that many, because I think the last time we had a contest, there were maybe like 12 or 15 people. But I was dead wrong. I was getting reports from Alliance and Guild members that people couldn't get into the district because it was full. Some people estimated around 100 to 150 people at any given time at this party, and I just couldn't believe it. I never did get a head count or anything like that, and I'm not sure how many people can fit into a district before it fills up, but I do know that there were a lot of people there. So with this, I was just simply not able to do all the activities that I had planned, and I feel bad about that. You know, I wanted to do some drunk racing and maybe take some people out into the Isle of Nameless, the explorable area, for some other games. But there were just too many people. I would have been alienating too many others if I would have just taken seven other people, you know. Plus, I bought 150 Dwarven Ale, and I got about 20 Hunter's Ales from trade-ins. And they were all gone within the hour. It was pretty much a constant stream of trade windows for at least 45 minutes once I announced that I'd give the ale away. This made it especially difficult to talk to anyone or respond to anyone. And I felt bad about that afterwards because I think there were a lot of people that felt neglected. But all in all, you know, with the ale giveaways and the transmogrifier giveaways, thanks to Solid Smurf and my guild for providing those, I think most people had a lot of fun, and that's really all I hoped for anyway. At the end, I gave away about 25 to 30 gold items also, and I had actually planned on giving away a lot more, but I'll make that up in upcoming contests. And also, I wanted to thank the people who, I didn't realize it at the time since I was just flipping through trade windows and, you know, pressing, you know, dragging the ale over and then pressing accept. And I didn't realize it at the time, but people were giving me stuff too. I looked at my inventory, and I had a couple green items and a couple other things. And so thanks to you who gave me stuff, I didn't even realize you gave it to me. Any other time I would, of course, check out my trade window, but this time I was just giving stuff away, so it wasn't a big deal. But, you know, I want to thank everyone who came. It really meant a lot to me that you take time away from the game to come show me your support, especially those of you in time zones where it was like 1 or 2 a.m., you know, or even later. It just really goes to show the thoughtfulness and kindness of the Guild Wars community, and I really do appreciate it. And that reminds me, once Lady Sinea logged on, since it was her birthday, we finally coaxed her into getting on to TeamSpeak with us so we could all sing a little lag-delayed version of Happy Birthday to her. It was really so bad, it's kind of funny. So thanks to the following people for singing to her. There was Karth Snipeshot, Yugal of the Hills, Fergus, Hart, Dyke, Kelun, Lord Arachnus, Manifest, Master Stevie, Mirage, Prepare for Poonage, Solid Smurf, and Steelhammer. If I forgot anyone, I apologize, but I think I wrote down everybody who was in the TeamSpeak at that time. But I'm going to go ahead and play that now because it's kind of funny and almost embarrassing. Oh, man. Happy birthday to you. Lag for the win.
That's gonna be like, yeah. you should put that on like the audio and call it the most butchered birthday song ever conceived.
Maybe we should do it one at a time.
Horrible. No, that was awesome.
No, we need to like get them more organized.
Yeah, we need to do it like one at a time.
Oh.
Yeah.
Ow. WDF.
My uncle had this workshop in his basement when I was growing up, and on that workshop door, he had a little sign that said, "The one who dies with the most toys wins." That's basically the entire theory behind farming in Guild Wars, and any MMO, actually. We're not going to be able to keep anything in the real world that we obtain in a computer game, yet we try our hardest to get it still. It's the thrill of the hunt. The bragging rights of being the first in your guild to reach 500k in storage, or getting the newest green item. I don't say this as I snub my nose up at farmers, because I'm certainly guilty of this myself. Actually, I used to really farm a lot. Farming in Guild Wars is basically defined as repeatedly hunting the same enemies in a certain location that is known to have a special item drop or unusually high gold drops. This is done by either using a certain skill combination that was proven to work well together as a solo farmer, or a certain team build that is equally as effective. No matter the method, the rewards usually far outweigh the time and energy it takes to obtain them, at least in the eye of the beholder. Farming can also include doing something repeatedly to obtain faction, experience, or, more recently, promotion points as well. Faction farming is very popular in this game. Since Guild Wars Factions came out, there have been probably hundreds of guilds created for the sole purpose of faction farming, possibly even thousands of guilds. But I'll talk more on that later. Right now, I'm going to focus on item and gold farming for the most part. ArenaNet's stance on farming has been a little mixed in my opinion. They've said before that they understand that people do this, and it's not really a big deal, except in the case where there are whole companies set up for the sole purpose of farming for gold to sell on eBay or possibly their own website. That directly breaks their usage agreement. So in that regard, I'm certainly not going to endorse farming for real-world profit. I'm just talking about simple farming. ArenaNet is also pretty famous for eliminating or nerfing certain farming methods, such as the recent nerf of Spirit Bond when used in a farming situation. Many people got really upset over this, some to the point of quitting the game. But, as I've mentioned before, you just learn to roll with it, you know? God forbid you play through the storyline that they've worked so hard to create. Some may argue that they've beaten the storyline, or that they're tired of beating halls, or maybe their guild already controls a town, or possibly they have their eyes on a certain set of 15k armor, and they have to farm to get that armor. Well, that's fine. And I think ArenaNet is fine with that too, but it's just when it comes down to farming to sell for real-world money is when it becomes a problem. There was an article recently in PC Gamer magazine about the lives of Chinese gold farmers. It was a great article where the farmers told about their living conditions provided by the company they work for, and they talked about how many hours a day they spend doing the same thing over and over again, just for a measly wage, which basically is just making their employer richer and richer. Some even had aspirations of one day starting their own MMO gold farming business. Now, even though to the Western world, those wages and living conditions might seem a travesty, the fact is they're making great money for their area of the world, and they're spending their day playing a computer game instead of doing something like manual labor. This is the allure of the gold farmer. This is why you can go on eBay right now and do a search for Guild Wars Gold and come back with literally dozens of pages of results. And this is what ArenaNet is trying to stop. I'll admit something right now that I'm not really too proud of. I've actually purchased Guild Wars Gold from eBay before. Of course, it was back when I first started the game, and it was before I even knew what I was doing or how to make money, or it was actually before I started the podcast also, but I figured one day I'd see what type of eBay items they had on eBay, and there it was. There was 100K for $5. Wow. I thought, you know, I've been playing this game for like a month now, and I don't even have 5K, but for the price of like 15 minutes of my time, I can have 100K? That's awesome. Yeah, I'm not really too proud of that, but I chalk it up to not knowing any better. I would almost guarantee that half of you listening right now have done the same thing, possibly more. You know, there's no booming gold farming industry for nothing. But my whole point is, now that I know better and I realize what an impact that something like that has on the economy of Guild Wars, I wouldn't do it again. Plus, it's just downright cheating. In relation to this, let me read this email I just got this week that I want to read to put in two perspectives, really. The first one is to show how the greed for in-game gold can spread from simple farming to more malicious endeavors. And the second point is to reinforce a scam warning that I've talked about before. This might seem a little bit off topic at first, but it's really not once I read all the way through it. He says, "Hey Sean, going back over some of your older episodes, 29 specifically, I was interested in your article on scams and wanted to share my bad experience of this. Please feel free to share. Now, I know the warnings are there for us to see each time we log on, but sometimes our greed or dishonesty just gets the better of us. Standing in Ascalon City, looking at the chat channels, a lone message pops up that says, 'Check out www.whatever.com for great tips, cheats, and hacks.' So I do, and I see a few downloads available. There's an item identifier, says find out what an unidentified item is, or get XP. Just press Shift-Control-P and type in the amount of XP you want added to your character, among others. So I downloaded an EXE. The instructions say, run the EXE, then log on to your account and press the relevant buttons to activate the hack. So I do. Now I'm a grown man, I have worked with computers and used the internet for many, many years. I am aware of viruses, phishing, trojans, etc. I'm also aware that running an executable on my PC could potentially destroy my PC, my children, and the civilized world. But I still did it. So the first thing I noticed was the sequence of key presses did nothing. Oh well. The second thing I noticed was I got kicked. Unusual, but not unheard of. So I logged in again. 10 seconds later, kicked. Bloody servers, I thought, and decided to have a shower and get dressed. I molded over in the shower. That EXE, I thought, it could be reformatting my hard drive. Back downstairs, dripping water, I unplugged the Cat5, delete the EXE, ran a full virus check, and cleaned the registry. 30 minutes later, I log on to GW again. Strange, all of my characters are in their underwear. Logged on, kicked. Oh my god, what is happening? The penny begins to drop. I change my account name to a different email address and the password. Then log in. I don't get kicked, except metaphorically. I am close to tears, seriously. My main necro is stood in her black bra and knickers with nothing. Nothing. I checked storage, nothing. Well, except for 250 iron ingots. It's the same story with every character. I am devastated. I cannot believe what has happened. All those hours playing, neglecting my home and family, missing exciting football games on TV. So I contact ArenaNet and go through the motions, but I recover nothing. I still have my account, at least. Wouldn't you steal the account first, then take the stuff, if you were so inclined? Probably. I sell the ingots and buy a staff, then run around old Ascalon in my bra and panties, farming gargoyles, stone elementals, and Grawl, weeping softly to myself. I didn't beg, I didn't shout that this website is a shower of asterisks around the outposts. I did tell my exploit to a couple of people largely as a warning, and later did buy 100,000 GW gold online for $10, possibly from a similar outfit who robbed me. And now I'm over it, definitely wiser. My characters are fully developed protectors of Tyria and master cartographers, etc. And maybe it has made me a better online person. I sympathize with new players more and like to help out whenever I can. But I hate the fact that the characters who did this to me are still out there in Tyria, Kantha, and Alona doing this to other people. Message to all, don't let it happen to you. Cheers to Monica the Cursed from Singapore. Well, you know, this story goes to show how these things can get out of hand. Especially where he said that he bought the gold again from eBay. You know, he bought 100,000. I guess it's like he said, it goes to show that this stuff all just goes full circle. Now, I'm not saying that I'm against farming at all. Heck, I made a Spirit Bond monk farming video a few months ago, if you'll remember. But when I talk about farming here in the rest of this episode and in the future, I just want to let you know that it's meant to help you earn money in the game doing whatever it is that you feel you want to do. Because I think a lot of these farming builds are really ingenious. I think they take a lot of skill and they take a lot of playing ability to be able to farm in a lot of the areas. And you can't just be some run-of-the-mill guy going out there and trying to farm. You know, if you've ever done the 55 monk UW farming run, it takes some skill. But my point is, just don't let it consume your game experience. So what makes a good item or gold farming spot? Well, there are several factors. The most important being the rewards you get from that area, of course. But you need to take other factors into consideration also, like when you make a farming build, do you need condition removal or hex removal? It's safest to stick to one type of enemy with one type of damage that you know will congregate in that area, and the more the merrier. But also, will there be other types of creatures that will be near enough to possibly cause a condition or hex that could throw off your entire build? Also, you want to think of the proximity of your farming spot to a town or outpost. If you're solo farming, you don't want to have to travel for 20 minutes, encountering a variety of creatures who are a variety of classes, just to get to your farming spot. For examples of both sides of this, you have the troll caves outside of Drachner's Forge. It takes about 2 or 3 minutes to get to the caves themselves. In the meantime, you encounter Avakara, who could prove to be difficult with certain solo farming builds. On the flip side of this, though, are the Alona Reach Minotaurs, who are only seconds from the entrance to the mission. You run over, group together the Minotaurs, and you have your farming spot. It's that easy. No other creatures get in your way. That's why that was one of the simplest farming spots in the game, until the recent changes to Spirit Bond, which brings us to our next topic, the history and changes to farming. In the beginning, there was Tyria. Balthazar gazed upon it, and it was good. In the early days of farming, it was all experimental. People were discovering skill combinations that ArenaNet hadn't foreseen as potential for farmers. Monsters didn't run from Firestorm. Life was good. But throughout the course of the game, ArenaNet, being the ever-changing and interactive company that they are, decided that a few aspects of the game made gaining riches a bit too easy. Then came the change to area of effect damage. Before this change, creatures would stand around and take massive damage from spells that caused damage per second, most infamously from Firestorm, which is now actually considered laughable if you still have it on your PvE skill bar. But now, when an AoE spell is cast, the creatures run away from it automatically, sometimes even just standing around and not attacking for a few seconds, which ironically makes the whole point of them escaping damage seem a little pointless. The good part about this change, I found, is that I use AoE spells like Lava Font on my Ellie to get the mobs off of me when they start pounding, you know, from up close. It makes them scatter away, seeking other targets. So, in that case, that AoE change worked out pretty good. But that's about it. ArenaNet has also introduced other creatures into well-known farming spots to defeat certain farming builds. For example, they introduced scarabs into the desert near the once popular Desert Griffin farming area. They added Dying Nightmares to the popular Underworld farming spot in an attempt to remove enchantments. There's an in-game hint screen which was introduced that states that repeatedly killing the same creatures in the same location would cause the value of the loot dropped to be reduced for a period of time. This is called the anti-farm code. It says, because you've been repeatedly killing just the first few monsters at the start of the map, those monsters are starting to run low on loot. You can just play through the maps normally a few times and everything will return to normal. So this, again, is to get people to do something other than just spend their days and nights only farming. The 55 Monk, as mentioned in several episodes of Guildcast, was the premier method of solo farming, mostly in the first part of the Underworld. It had a relatively expensive setup, though, and it took some real skill to learn successfully. And then with factions came the introduction of a spell that would change all of that, Spirit Bond. It made the Invincible Monk much, much cheaper and easier to play. Of course, it didn't work everywhere, but it was great for people who weren't hardcore into farming like me. And then it came. On October 25th, 2006, they made it so the Spirit Bond could only be affected by the next 10 spells or attacks, rendering it useless in a mob farming situation. But, you know, I've said it before and I'll say it again. I have faith in the Guild Wars player community to figure out a new and possibly better build for solo farming with the new Alonian skills. So I guess we'll just wait and see. In this PvP segment, I'm going to talk about faction farming in Chapter 2 and fame farming in Heroes Ascent. Now, the main purpose of faction farming is to amass faction with either the Kurzix or the Luxans. Faction farming is commonly practiced by members of an alliance trying to increase their alliance faction with either nation, or going for a certain title such as Friend of the Kurzix or Friend of the Luxans. For each side, there are a few areas that players go to farm faction. These are competitive missions like Fort Aspenwood and the Jade Quarry, challenge missions like Altrum Ruins, Amat's Basin, Zos Shivros Channel, and the Arios Mines. Alliance battles, which you can go to from your guild hall. Or repeating PvE quests over and over. This tends to be the fastest way to gain faction, but it's also targeted by ArenaNet to tone down the speed by which players can gather faction. One of the best current examples of this is the Kurzix Curing Echovald Forest quest. There's also farming faction with Balthazar points as well. Some players farm faction with Balthazar mainly for the purpose of unlocking weapon upgrades, runes, or skills from PvP. Some players farm faction with Balthazar simply by partaking in all sorts of PvP matches, from random arenas or team arenas or anything like that. However, others farm it using PvE. This is mainly done in the Zacian challenge missions on the Battle Isles. Doing this challenge over and over rewards faction like a regular PvP match, but it's faster with the likelihood of losing being very slim. And take note on this that farming using the Zacian challenge has a cap of 2,000 faction per day. Otherwise, people would just be farming those things forever, because they're pretty easy. Now, with fame farming, it's basically a way to gain higher PvP rank, which gives you a special emote, like a deer, wolf, tiger, or phoenix. For each consecutive win in the Hall of Heroes, you gain progressively more fame. The point at which this is considered farming is when a player uses a popular build, such as Ai Wei or Vimwei, there's Touch Rangers, Dual Smite, Blood Spike, any of those that are known to work really well, and they use those repeatedly, basically all day, every day, for the sole purpose of gaining more fame and a higher rank. This is a harmless method of farming, though, since you're not doing anything wrong, and you're not doing it for profit, but it's still considered farming in a way. Of course, there are the people who actually sell highly ranked accounts to other players for profit, which, as you guessed it, is against the terms of use. There are several ways to farm fame. Most methods include simply finding a good group, whether it's joining a PvP guild who does hauls a lot, or maybe taking a chance at finding a good pug. But also you can try what's known as henchway, which is having a full party of henchmen. This is actually more useful than you might think in a balanced group setting, because the AI of the henchmen is set up pretty well for balance, but it's not useful against any sort of experienced human player group. Also, a more improved version of using henchway is using heroes. The biggest advantages of heroes over henchmen is, of course, the customization and control, which makes them almost like human players that can be set on autopilot occasionally. The current state of farming in Guild Wars has changed dramatically since the early days. We know that. So where does it stand today? This is a segment I hope to incorporate into future episodes of Guildcast on a more regular basis. So without getting into too many specific locations or detailed builds for right now, since I'll save those for future shows, I will go over some basic things for now to get you started. First off, the Dervish is going to be a farmer's dream. I only say going to be because players are just scratching the surface now on what a Dervish can actually do. With the up-close sweeping melee attacks combined with the use of enchantments, I'd bet on the Dervish soon replacing the Monk as the preferred farming class. Also, when I was working my way through the storyline of Nightfall, I could hardly take my eyes away from the gorgeous landscapes long enough to realize that there are actually some potential farming spots out there. I haven't personally tried any real farming in Alona yet, but some places that are being tested now include Arjok Ward, Vegin Mines, Dajaran Estate, Barbarous Shore, Jahai Bluffs, Forum Highlands, Sunward Marches, Marga Coast. I could literally just go on and on, but the point is, anywhere where there's a few bosses with green items that are worth anything, that's where you'll do best to farm. Since several of these areas have a variety of creatures, it's good to take henchmen and heroes in your farming group. But wait, a full party isn't solo farming. The drops will go to them and not me. This is a flawed idea, Sean. What are you talking about? Well, no, not necessarily. With Nightfall, this has been changed, and there's a way around it. If you're going to be farming a certain boss for a certain green drop item that he may have, you can actually improve your chances of getting that drop by first making sure that you have a nice solo build. And then what you do is you kill all the boss's companions with heroes and henchies, and then, before you actually kill the boss, you send your heroes and henchies away with that command that you can do on the little radar map. And you set the flag to the other end of the map. You know, get them as far away as you can. Of course, don't let them go in a group of enemies. And then from there, it's just you versus the boss yourself. Now, I've learned one other thing regarding this, is that if you bring a good minion master, like I like to bring Elias with me, and let him raise up enough minions so that when I go to fight the boss, the boss is being basically body blocked, you know, by the minions. They're acting as a meat shield to keep him there. So I'll do this with my Ellie, where I'll stay back and nuke at him while the minions keep him in one spot. And all the rest of my heroes are way back. The minions don't gain experience, you know. So, and they don't have a chance of getting any item drop. So it's basically just me versus the boss. And the chance of me getting his green drop is greatly improved. Now, I've done this several times where I haven't gotten the drop. So there still is a chance that you won't get it. But I believe from what I've seen and what I've heard from other people that it actually, doing it this way does increase your chance of getting that green drop. Another aspect of farming that's been recently introduced with Nightfall is farming for Sunspear and Lightbringer points. Basically, this is like any other kind of farming, but to me it's a little more fun. Sure, you may not get the monetary rewards that you would with item farming, but you can still get a title like you do with faction farming. And for each rank of Lightbringer, you deal 5% more damage to and have 1% damage reduction against Abaddon and his demonic servants. You get Lightbringer and Sunspear points by either doing quests or by talking to certain NPCs standing near the res shrines in each area. They'll tell you what creatures to kill for their promotion bounties. And again, just remember that this is just meant to be a basic overview of the current state of farming in the game. But you can look for more detailed descriptions on farming hotspots and builds in future editions of this segment.
Hey y'all, this is Lady Sinea bringing you the word on the street. I'm sorry I wasn't able to talk to everyone last Sunday. I don't know if this happens to anyone else, but I get whispers even before I finish logging in. People see me online in their friends lists, but really, I'm just still in the load-in screen when I hear the whisper sound. So yeah, on Sunday, I logged in, and there in my guild hall is a throng of people, and local chat is just flooding the screen. I scroll up to see who it was that whispered me, and there's about a page and a half of whispers before the green text of the guild announcements. Yeah, I told you, I get whispers before I finish logging in. Then it was being demanded that I get on TeamSpeak, but between all the people in the hall and all of the people on TS, my system just could not handle it. I would type something and then it would show up on the screen like 30 seconds later, and TS sounded like a bunch of cacophonous cracks and pops and maybe an occasional word if I was lucky. So I didn't hear anything if anyone was trying to talk to me, and once I got a chance to scroll up again and see who it was who whispered me, that text was long gone because there was so much other chat. So I'm sorry I did not catch your names, people who whispered me, but believe me, I was not trying to ignore you. I just didn't get a chance to talk to everyone that evening. I did get some really cute presents from you guys. A bunch of glue members gave me all of their brown dye. I got a couple of flowers, a piece of birthday cake that gave me a sugar rush. And on a side note, I think there should totally be a sugar addict title, just like there's one for the drunkard. I also got a beautiful feather, a beautiful pearl, and a beautiful pendant, which I believe were originally intended for some lady other than Sinea, but I've got them now, so who's Rurik's girlfriend now, huh? And according to my quest log, he even wants me to rendezvous with him in Nolani, if you know what I mean. And speaking of old Ascalon, I've been playing my Mesmer through Prophecies, since I just remade him fairly recently. After I got out of Priest-Searing, I had a guildie take me over to Elona, Land of the Golden Sun, not to be confused with Elona Reach, so that I could pick up some heroes. So, Koss, Milani, and Drunkoro, that's his new nickname, Drunkoro, they helped me take back the Great Northern Wall. I decimated the first group of char that were standing around, but the rest of them were all milling about and not standing in the line of fire of the trebuchet. Fortunately, Koss was quick to volunteer for the next task that I assigned to the heroes. Not that he had a choice, really, but he puffed out his chest and proclaimed, "This move always impresses Milani." I rolled my eyes and sent him and his two buddies to go round up the enemy. I then fired the trebuchet and wiped out all of the char, as well as the heroes. Their sacrifice was not in vain, though, for in the end, Torch Spitfur and the rest of those creatures were all dead. Would that we could have also killed Scorch Embershire, who Senea had the distinct displeasure of meeting in the Gate of Secrets. I wonder, does it say something about me that even though my Ellie and my Mesmer are now on my primary account and have access to all of the chapters, Ariana is still running around the Dunes of Despair and Kane is off looking for Duke Baradin's daughter? Or why, when Senea heard of the misfortune that befell the Elonian caravan that succumbed to the elements during their pilgrimage to Augury Rock, how she hurried to reunite the poor souls so that even in death they could finally complete their journey to the hallowed ascension grounds. And you know, that poor Norgu, I never did see his work in Rurik, Prince of Tyria, or whatever it was that he called it, but I'm sure that it was quite terrible and horribly inaccurate. I remember the very first time that I saw someone carrying a fiery dragon sword, and I was like, ooh, you look like a royal guard! But really, the fact that Guild Wars is not an item-based game makes it easy to play without having to pay an arm and a leg for good equipment. Cheating in this regard is pretty much nil in Guild Wars. Nothing like what I used to do in Diablo 2. My characters were so godly because they all had hacked equipment. One time, I was rushing a full group in Nightmare, and I lagged really bad, and I thought I was gonna die, but my level 98 mercenary Zanari was so elite that he just soloed Diablo by himself while I was lagging. And then dueling was so pointless, because with the Ith weapons and the White Rings, you'd have, like, an Amazon and a Barbarian dueling, and one would steal 1,000 health, and then the other would steal another 1,000 health back, and the battle would just never end. So yeah, because success in Guild Wars is not dependent upon how awesome your equipment is, you don't have any of that kind of junk in this game. You don't even have to spend a lot on armor. I know this is really simple, but the less you spend, the more gold you'll have on hand. Don't waste a bunch of money buying fur for your Ranger's Ascalon armor, when there's just going to be better armor in the next town. I went through the game using mediocre weapons that I found, and pretty much just collecting armor the entire way. A lot of times, you'll get gold weapons that aren't worth very much, or they have weird mods that don't match each other, like they're for different attributes. So sometimes it's easier just to salvage the more valuable mod off of the weapon and sell that by itself, and it will also sell faster if you do that. When green items first came out, I loved that because there was no more guesswork on how much things were worth, and it was really easy to buy and sell them. I also liked green farming because I enjoy team farming a lot more than solo farming. Sure, more things can go wrong in a group of pugs, but I still find it more interesting to have people to talk to. That really is the allure of an online game like this, is interacting with other people. Even when I'm playing solo, I'm usually still talking in guild chat or otherwise. I have some Nightfall and Factions greens, but only because they dropped while I was skill capping. I really can't get into that trying to farm a single boss over and over and getting disappointed so many times and then eventually finally getting the item if I don't get sick of trying to farm for it. There's just something too monotonous and repetitive about doing that which I just can't enjoy. I farmed Kepket and Rotscale and Sunreach, those type of bosses, maybe half a dozen times each max, but it's just too boring for me. The only area in Factions where I ever did much green farming was in Sunjiang, where, with a group of friends, we'd go kill all the constructs. The drop rate wasn't so great, but for some reason, going on a full run and killing all the bosses is just so much more entertaining to me than going and killing the same boss over and over again. There is, however, one really strong argument against team farming, which I cannot deny. Quite unfortunately, I met Loudon and his guildies in Sorrow's Furnace. And everything has gone downhill since. Now, another way that I like to make money is I farm for common materials. Then I make them into rare crafting materials and then sell them. A lot of times, you don't even need to deal with selling them to other players. You can just turn a profit by selling them to the rare material trader. Just look and see which ones would give you the most return for the least amount of effort and expense. Also, people like to leave a lot of junk behind. I pick up everything, and I'll even go back and grab things that other people left behind. A lot of times, that worthless stuff salvages into steel and linen and such. I can sell steel now to the trader for more than I used to sell it to players for, so it's worth it to pick that stuff up. One way to get better drops is to crop rotate. Don't just farm the same spot over and over. Go to different farming locations. Do a quest, or a mission or something in between. Go farm some shards in FOW, and then go back to your original spot. If you clear an area, go through the portal and into the next zone, so that you're playing through the map normally. But really, it's all about the crop rotation. Plus, it breaks up the monotony if you get bored. So that's going to be it for me this week. Until next time, this has been Lady Sinea bringing you The Word on the Street.
That'll wrap up another episode of Guildcast for this week. Next week, the topic will be inscriptions and insignias, where I'll go over what they're used for exactly, as well as cover some scams that people are trying to pull with insignias and inscriptions recently. In today's show notes at guildcast.com, I'm going to compile a list of farming guides and articles that have been very helpful to me and hopefully will be helpful to you too. This includes a link to a site that Coogan has set up just for farming. I'd like to also say hi to any new listeners to the show. And if you'd like to get in touch with any of us, my email is Sean, that's S-H-A-W-N, at guildcast.com. And Lady Sinea's is LadySinaea at gmail.com. Check out the Guildcast forums for any other stuff going on in the Guildcast community at www.guildcast.com/forum. So that's it. Until next time, be sure to tell your friends and tell your guildmates about guildcast.com.